Welcome to the IWC podcast this week on Savage's Condo on the Moon. Normally we get the Randy Savage off the top, but it's serious business. It's WrestleMania, and that's serious stuff. Also, we got a good Randy Savage story with our guest this week, who will be coming up later, WWE referee Jimmy Corderas. We talk about WrestleMania, refereeing, and all that's going on in the world of the WWE. It's a good conversation. We'll get to that in a little bit. But for now, we bring in Chris Walder to talk about some WrestleMania news notes as we approach Sunday and the excitement builds for WrestleMania.
Two more days, buddy. I'm looking forward to it.
And the announcement made via the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast on Podcast One, Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to be at WrestleMania. That's a pretty big deal. We didn't seem to hear about this on Raw for some reason.
Yeah, way to just throw that out of the blue, you know? It's like, oh, Stone Cold Steve Austin, the biggest star in the history of the sport, is going to be at WrestleMania. No big deal. We're not going to promote that on Raw. He'll just show up, and you'll love it anyway.
Well, you know, they did a better job at JR's show of keeping it a surprise, because JR did his one-man show last night in New Orleans, had two shows, and at the late show, if you were one of those lucky people, you got to see JR and Stone Cold kicking it on stage at the House of Blues venue down there. So apparently, from what I gather, people went nuts over that.
That would be pretty cool. It's a shame we're here in Toronto, man, and we're not in New Orleans enjoying all of the festivities.
Well, you're in Toronto. I'm in Hamilton. And, yeah, it
well,
does...
Well, in the GTA, you know what I mean. We're in Canada. We're not in New Orleans.
That's true. But Hamilton is not part of the GTA, but we don't have time to argue and debate that.
I didn't pass geography, apparently.
It's all right. anyway, what did you think of the Go Home Raw show? I thought, you know, the ending couldn't have been better. I mean, the show leading up to it, I don't know so much, but the way it ended, Daniel Bryan got his licks in, not just on Triple H, but on Randy Orton and on Batista, and comes into WrestleMania riding a high and momentum, and I think it looks very good for all things considered how this has went. You know, it's been a rocky road to get here, but I'm pretty pleased with how the main event picture is looking for this card at WrestleMania.
Well, it was a cool moment. I mean, seeing Daniel Bryan pumping his hands in the air with the yes chants and all the fans. But personally, I would have liked to see Triple H, Orton, Batista kind of get the upper hand going into WrestleMania, make Bryan look like more of an underdog because, I mean, I think we both agree that he's going to win both matches or at least win the championship in the main event. So why not make it even more of a moment, like have him overcome more obstacles, and then, you know, when he faces Triple H and then when he takes on Batista and Orton, that's just how I would have played it out. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, other than that, it was a cool moment. Obviously, you know, everyone has their full support behind the guy, but personally, I would have just liked to see him just get beat down one more time.
But I think when you look at how this has been built directed primarily at the smart fans, and that would indicate to them, oh, Bryan went over on the last Raw, well, that's bad news, that means something bad's going to happen to him. And Triple H has been playing into all of this, and I think that it's actually reverse booking at its finest, and I think they've done a wonderful job using Triple H, Stephanie, and what they're good at making everyone believe what should be the most logical conclusion of all, that Daniel Bryan is going to beat Triple H and win the title and have 70,000 people chanting yes. They have thrown so much cold water on people that are the so-called smart fans believing in that some people are actually thinking Triple H might be the world champion after Sunday's all said and done, and I think that's tremendous.
Well, I think the idea is still being floated around that Bryan and Triple H ends in a no contest or some sort of shady finish happens where Hunter gets added to the main event along with Bryan and we somehow end up with a fatal four-way. But yeah, give credit to these guys for actually making the common fan and the smart fan such as us think that, you know what, Triple H may go over Bryan and he may be in the main event. We might not see the 70,000 people chanting yes, but that's what you have to do because, frankly, the answer is so obvious. It's staring us right in the face. but they have to kind of make it seem like it's not going to be that way.
And where they have totally failed in creating that doubt is with The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
I get into this with Jimmy Corderas, who we mentioned in the interview, but I'll mention it off the top here as well. Jimmy did a great article on The Streak on sportsnet.ca/WWE. Go check it out. He's talking about The Undertaker's streak, and I won't give it all away because we talk about it in the interview, but a great article nonetheless by Jimmy. But one of the things we talk about later on here is I just have no belief that Brock Lesnar is going to win this match, and they've given me no reason to believe.
Well, I mean, I didn't think he was going to win in the first place. He's a part-timer, you know. If that streak's going to end to anybody, it's going to be someone who could use the rub and someone who's going to stick with WWE for the long term. But, yeah, the build-up to this match has been terrible. And in recent years, we've had that kind of that thought in the back of our head that maybe the streak is going to end when he faced CM Punk, when he had those string of four matches with HBK and Triple H. There was always a possibility. But this year, I mean, the first physicality we saw from Lesnar was this past Monday night on Raw when he gave him an F5, and that was only because Heyman distracted him, right? That's supposed to make us think that the Beast Incarnate can beat the Phenom? Absolutely not.
And it wasn't like The Undertaker was laid out. He was right back up, kind of staring at him after it happened.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I just got nothing going on for me with the streak match this year. Hopefully, because expectations are so low, hopefully they actually deliver a solid match. Because the worst thing in the world is to see someone who you revere as a superstar, be it in wrestling or in sports, and just feel like you've seen their best days and you start to see the age and the wear and the tear. No one wants to see that.
Well, I mean, looking back, I think him ending his streak at WrestleMania 28 when he had that end of an era Hell in a Cell with Triple H and Shawn as the special guest referee, that would have been perfect. Because I still feel that, you know, 20-0 was a nice round number. He could have walked off into the sunset like that. You know, once he gets to 21, 22, 23, does it really matter anymore? But now that he is sticking around, and I do feel like he is going to lose eventually, and that's going to be his final match, you might as well, you know, give it to someone who deserves it. This whole Lesnar thing, it's like, it would have been smarter a couple of years ago when they had that UFC confrontation where they kind of stared each other down. But now it's, you know, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's not working for me. And the other thing is, too, I don't think The Undertaker is getting to, I really don't think that's going to happen. So that there's an issue there. I'm a little concerned.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm not concerned about, though, is Bray Wyatt and John Cena. I think they've done a tremendous job building up this match. I think Bray Wyatt, we'll see if he ends up going over John Cena, but they made this into a big thing, and unless they totally screw it up, I can't see how Bray Wyatt doesn't come out looking pretty good after Sunday with competing with John Cena on the grandest stage of them all, as they say.
Well, in previous weeks, Bray Wyatt's been looking like a million bucks with his promos on the Titantron, and then his in-ring interaction with Cena, you know, tying him into the ropes and putting the sheet mask on him. And then last week when Cena comes behind them when they're doing their follow the buzzards pose, and then he's still wearing the sheet mask. That's been really cool. And lest we forget, you know, John Cena's the main event guy. He's been working with some of the top stars in the industry at the past few WrestleManias. So this match wasn't going to happen unless Cena was 100% behind it. And maybe Wyatt was handpicked by Cena. So that's a big rub as well. But in the end, I think Wyatt needs to go over. There's really no, I mean, you know, Cena winning at WrestleMania is always an awesome moment, especially for the young ones. But I think the smart way to go is to have Wyatt go over clean. He's going to be pushed as a top heel in the next year or so. So why not give him a momentum boost by having him go over the top guy?
And, you know, it's been a good build. The only thing I had a problem with John Cena with the overalls and the sheep mask and all that, he had to throw on that headband after he took off the sheep mask. Was that really necessary?
The headband?
Yeah, he had his headband and he threw it on right at the end. I just was like, oh, man, you actually created a moment that I legitimately popped for, and then you do that.
Yeah, what are you doing, Cena? Come on.
Typical John Cena. You got to sell that merchandise. I don't know. But anyway, as for the rest of this card, I don't know if anything really is catching my fancy, so to speak. It just hasn't really done a lot for me. I mean, we get into all the matches other than the Shield and the corporate team. We didn't get into that with Jimmy because I just plain forgot about it. That's how important that match has become. We do talk about the Shield and the Outlaws, but we don't talk about the match. But the match itself, I mean, the Shield are winning in this, and they're going to win, I would think, rather emphatically, I would hope, anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still have the idea that the Kane and the Authority have a chance, but that's only if the Shield splits, because I think that's inevitable at this point. But, yeah, if there's no sign of any, you know, dissension between the three, the Shield should go over.
Yeah, I don't see a reason to break them up now. You've got something going pretty good right now. I'd stick with it for a while. I mean, ride this out to SummerSlam. Break them up there.
Yeah, and the WWE needs some top faces at the moment, with the exception of the two obvious ones, Daniel Bryan and John Cena. You can have the Shield as kind of a collective number three.
Yeah, and then, of course, we got our Andre the Giant Battle Royal, which we get into with Jimmy, and, you know, I don't know what the heck's going to happen out of this. I mean, Jimmy seems to think they might go the traditional route with the Big Show, but... you know, he has his concerns with the audience that will be there in New Orleans if they will like that. I echoed those concerns in our interview. You'll hear that in just a couple minutes. But I don't know. I don't know what they can do with this Battle Royal that would get me excited. I mean, I struggle to find something that I would find compelling in this thing.
Well, it depends how the company sees it, because either this is supposed to be used to build a young guy and push him over the top, or it's just going to be used for nostalgic purposes. And if that's the case, then the Big Show would be the obvious route. You know, he was the son of Andre back at WCW, but that's obviously come and gone. But, I mean, if I had to make my pick, and I do feel like this should go to someone who could use it moving forward, I'm going with a guy that is not even announced in the match yet, and I think Alexander Rusev would be a nice choice, but until I actually see him enter the ring, I'm going to have my doubts. If he's not in there, Big Show, I guess, would be the obvious choice. I don't think Sheamus could really do anything with it. Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio. It's such a cluster, and it's something that I'm not really excited about.
Well, we'll get into all our predictions at the end of this podcast. But for now, we're going to lead into my interview with Jimmy Corderas. We talk about a number of things, his time as a referee in the WWE, how refereeing has evolved, all kinds of things. We even sneak in a little talk about ROH and how they make their titles matter and the WWE hasn't. It's good stuff, and you know, it was fun talking with Jimmy, and thanks for him taking the time to talk with us. I think it was tremendous.
Awesome, man. This should be good. Let's hear what you and Jimmy have to say.
This is the IWC Podcast, part of Savage's Condo on the Moon, and we are pleased to have a guest this week, and he is a longtime member of the WWE family. He was a referee for 22 years in the World Wrestling Federation / Entertainment, and nowadays you can catch him on Aftermath on the Score. Not on the Score. It's Sportsnet 360 now. It used to be the Score. He is Jimmy Corderas. Jimmy, thanks for joining me, and this is a real treat for me.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. This should be fun, and thanks for the correction there, Sportsnet 360. It took a while for us to get used to it, too.
Yeah, well, I used to work for the old Score with the basketball stuff, so that transition hasn't always fit well in my head yet. But anyway... We're not here to talk basketball, we're here to talk wrestling, and what I want to start with is your role in wrestling. My dad used to be an umpire in baseball, and what he used to say, being an umpire in baseball, you always want to just be invisible. The best thing to do for an umpire is that you don't even notice him. In wrestling, that almost has to be impossible, doesn't it?
Kind of impossible, but not impossible. I mean, obviously you're there and you're visible. See, a little different from baseball, and I don't want to take away from what the umps do in baseball, but you're in a 20-by-20 confine there, so it's very difficult to be impossible, but you try as best as you can to not be a focal point and let the talent tell the story.
But not only that, sometimes it calls for you to be part of that story, right?
Yeah, occasionally, and that's the tricky part. Staying invisible until it calls for you not to be invisible, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And one of the things I wanted to touch on while we're talking about refereeing, you were in it for a long time. What has changed about the referee's role, if anything, over the years from when you started to when you finished and even to nowadays?
The biggest change I've seen is, especially in the WWE, I know they've taken, further steps to make the referee appear more authoritative as opposed to, back in the day, the old adage, the blind ref never sees anything, easy to fool him and stuff like that. They've gotten away from that. They're trying to make it a little, in other words, if a heel's going to cheat, make him earn it, as opposed to, I'm going to grab the referee by the shirt, turn him around. That stuff always used to drive me crazy, and it was stuff that was done back in the day that nobody really paid attention to, but they really, really, took it to heart and said, listen, it just doesn't make sense for someone to distract referees that way. You got to be a little more creative and do it in a way where it seems like it's in the course of him doing his job that you're taking advantage of a referee behind his back and that sort of stuff. And again, just basically as time progressed, especially with Vince McMahon, his thing was really, referee has to look like he's in charge in there.
Yeah, and let's take this to an even bigger scale. You were with that company for so long, and this is probably an impossible question to answer in some senses, but is there like one or two major things that have stayed the same and one or two major things that have changed in this evolution from, like, you started back at WrestleMania 3 around there, right? Till now?
I was refereeing, I just started refereeing right before WrestleMania 3, so I was still too green to actually work at WrestleMania, that's for sure. My first one was 4, so, which was huge for me, but, the basics stay the same. You enforce the rules, the Phantom rule book, so to speak. But through the process, in a sense, you're kind of I guess you could call it a supporting actor, so to speak. You're the guy that kind of helps tell the story. But as far as things that have changed, I guess, other than some minor rule changes that have changed over the years, like for example, in the WWE, I can speak specifically for them. Back in the day, you used to warn about closed fist punches. Now they're fine. They're perfectly fine. Nobody gets warned over it. It's perfectly legal. Difference, especially with the evolvement of MMA, the rules regarding ground and pound, because before, when you had some guy down and you were grounding, punching the crap out of him, you had to stop him because he was using a closed fist. Now you don't have to do that as long as he's quote unquote intelligently defending himself while he's on the bottom. So there is some there's kind of like little bits of MMA that has kind of filtered in.
But in the larger sense, the business as a whole, it's really evolved and changed. But what have been some of the things that have maintained themselves, and what are the biggest changes you notice from the time that you entered the business to the time you left, and maybe even from when you left till now?
For me, the biggest change for me is the production values and the quality of the television and pay-per-views. I mean, when I first started, it was a very simple TV setup. You had a nice little entranceway with a few lights and the logo, the flashing logo in the back. Even Raw was simple, where they had the big three letters, the RAW, that the guys would walk through. And then as time progressed, just like everything else, the company evolved and grew. And for me, looking at it from a presentation standpoint, the biggest change is the production values. But from a product standpoint, it's weird because it almost goes in a circle. If I may for a second here, you think back to the some people and I refer to it as the golden era when Hulk Hogan came on the scene and the WWF at the time really exploded and became very popular, and people look back at that and say, well, it was a little quote-unquote cartoonish back then. It was a little more entertainment-based as opposed to in-ring product-based. And then that evolved into the next generation where you had your Bret Harts and your Shawn Michaels. And now and not saying that the in-ring product was bad then, it was just different. And then, like I said, those guys came along and changed how wrestling matches were viewed in the WWF at the time. And then you had the Attitude Era, and then, you know, things got edgy, and the envelope was being pushed as far as they could push it, and then they pulled the reins back a little bit, and, you know, even though they call it the PG era, I don't think it's totally PG. I mean, there are elements every once in a while of reverting back to, like, the Attitude Era. You see certain things, like this past Monday night, for example, the Daniel Bryan beatdown of Triple H at the end of Raw, which was fantastic. It was very physical. Even Triple H's beatdown of Daniel Bryan a couple of weeks ago, very physical, very attitude-esque, but not, you know, full-on Attitude Era. What it is when you see stuff like that and you don't see it all the time, it feels special. As opposed to, see, that was my biggest thing about when you watch a lot of hardcore stuff. If every match is a hardcore style match, then it's not special anymore.
Yeah, that kind of speaks to how ECW was. It was kind of a promotion that was largely based on that.
Mm-hmm. But the problem there was because of all that, you know, Paul Heyman was I guess ahead of the curve when it came to the hardcore style of wrestling. But people forget that there was a lot of good wrestling interspersed in a lot of that. hardcore stuff. They forget that there was Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko matches and stuff like that that were going on there, because it was almost overshadowed by the other crazy stuff that was going on.
Yeah, and it almost seems like, and I've, in listening to interviews with many different wrestlers, from Edge to a bunch of other guys, it almost seems like a lot of guys were doing that kind of hardcore style to get noticed and get attention, but once they got that attention, they figured out a way, wait, I can't keep doing this, I've got to figure a way to dial back this style. And you see that now more and more with guys today. I think they get it, and once they do get that certain level, they seem to dial it back a little bit, and that's only smart if you want to have a long career, right?
Absolutely, and perfect example is the guy who seems to be the hottest guy on the planet right now, Daniel Bryan. When he was working in ROH and Indies and that sort of stuff, you know, his style was, you know, if I made balls to the walls through the whole match, it was one speed, and it was high gear. You know what I mean? And in the WWE, when he came to the WWE, he developed. It's not that he totally lost that style, but it was. Know when to put that into place, if you know what I mean. It's kind of like priority one is telling a story and getting the fans invested. You know, you can have the greatest technical match in the world that, like 200 people will say, you know what, that was the best match I ever saw, but only 200 people saw it. You know, but 20,000 people. And Al Snow came up with the best analogy, I think. It was like, he always asked, what was the best match at WrestleMania 3? And 9 out of 10 people will answer Steamboat Savage, which technically was probably the best match on the card. But what did 93,000 people pay to see?
Hogan and Andre.
Exactly. So, you know, at the end of the day, it is a business, and you have to get your audience emotionally invested in the product. And in the WWE, they try to cater to a larger audience. They try to draw in casual fans as best they can, and that's where your money is, because your hardcore guys will be there.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think it's kind of, you know, we've reached a different era too, not just in wrestling, but in sports in general. I mean, the whole idea of a guy getting a concussion has a whole different meaning than it did 10 years ago.
Well, absolutely, because the information has come forward. It's happened in football, hockey. You look at it, you know, all the major contact sports, where now that we're becoming more educated with you know, head trauma and concussions, you know, greater steps are taken to protect the athletes and to protect the superstars and the wrestlers themselves. And And as much as people might scoff at the wellness program, I applaud them for it because it is very proactive. It definitely is looking after the talent, and you got to give them credit for that.
Yeah, and I mean, no one wants to see anything happen to these guys. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to see everyone stay healthy and have long lives long after they're done with wrestling.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the crux of the whole thing. It is a very physical way to make a living, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have tremendous respect for wrestlers. I mean, I've covered the NBA and pro basketball, but I've always had tremendous respect for wrestlers. They are athletes, and they do put their bodies on the line. And it's funny how we in pro sports, we talk about when the Raptors play a back-to-back, oh, my God. Well, wrestlers must listen to that and just chuckle.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are going like 250 and some even up to 300 nights a year, and taking punishment too. The body takes a beating. You know, a lot of people don't realize that something as simple as a body slam. I mean, okay, you know, obviously you're trained to learn how to try to disperse the impact as best as possible, but still, it takes a toll on your body. And when you land and air leaves your body, sometimes it's hard to get it back in.
Indeed. I want to go back to something you touched on about how everything almost comes full circle and what's been going on with the WWE of late. I almost feel like currently the WWE I'm not all that excited about, but I'm really excited about the future when I see some of the guys we see like The Shield, like Bray Wyatt, what they're doing down at NXT. Have we almost reached one of those transition points? Because we've seen the fans and their reactions, not just with John Cena, which has kind of been a constant, but Batista coming back and Randy Orton that they're kind of sick of. The fans are almost desperate for wanting something new, and I feel like we're at one of those transition points. Triple H has called this the reality era, and it's almost like, I feel like it's a start of something new.
The thing about, one person you touched on right there, Randy Orton, when I watch Randy Orton, I enjoy him when he's in the ring. It's just, it's the little things he does in the ring, and John Cena is another one who, in my opinion, doesn't get enough credit for being, everybody, you know, rails on him for the five moves of doom and that sort of stuff. But when you think back at some of the most exciting matches that we've had in the last few years, John Cena's been in a lot of them. And I know a lot of people say, wow, he was in there with CM Punk. He was in there with so-and-so. And he was in there with Randy Orton, of course. Those guys can make anybody look good. But it takes two to actually put on a good match, not just one. The old adage of he could wrestle with a broomstick, but the broomstick has to be able to wrestle a little bit too. You know what I mean? So as far as young talent coming up, I think, like you said, the future looks bright. And I kind of hearken it back to during the Monday Night Wars when WCW had raided so much of the top talent from the WWF at the time, and it was time for Vince to create new stars, and he did. And that was when the Rock came along, and Stone Cold Steve Austin came along, and guys like that. And I think we're in that kind of almost like a rebuilding process because, like you said, the established superstars. I'm not saying their time is done, but like you said, people are wanting change, but change for the sake of change is not good. It has to be done correctly, and I think they're doing it right by taking their time with certain talents. I mean, you mentioned Bray Wyatt. I think this guy is absolutely phenomenal. 20 years ago, this guy would be the most hated man in wrestling, but because the audience has changed, they're so entertained by his promo work and his uniqueness that they can't help but cheer. Same with The Shield. You know, they're different. All three guys bring something different to the table. You know, people dig that, and as long as they're entertained and people, like I said before, get emotionally vested in these guys, it works.
Yeah, and a lot of the talent we've seen over the years has come from ROH, which is a company that currently, what they're doing, I just love, because it seems like everything in that company focuses around their world title, which is currently held by Adam Cole. And in the WWE, we seem to have lost that value of what the championships mean. Not just the top championship, but I mean the Intercontinental title. You touched on the Savage Steamboat match. That was always a huge deal at WrestleMania. We have the Intercontinental Champion in a Battle Royal this year, and the U.S. Champion is in a six-man tag, and so on and so on. Does the WWE have to get back to making those titles mean something again?
I think it's a good step. I think it would be a good step because, like you said, back in the day, the Intercontinental Championship was almost, I don't want to say it was as revered as the WWF Championship, but it was a big title to win, and it meant something. That has been lost over the last few years, and I think that's definitely a detriment. I think if you have, again, if you have too many titles, though, I think maybe unifying the Intercontinental, I know this has been discussed by a lot of people, unifying the Intercontinental title and the U.S. title would be a good first step. And then actually have, maybe go back to a ranking system like they used to have in the old days. Like, here's your top five contenders for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, here's your top five contenders for the unified IC U.S. Championship. You know, maybe that would be a good first step. I don't know.
And that's actually a good idea in this era right now, because when you look over at the UFC, that's how they kind of do things. They have their rankings and stuff like that, and the crossover audience has grown and grown between UFC and WWE. There was once upon a time where these two things did not mix, but now we're seeing Ronda Rousey talking about wrestling, and she's got her four horsewomen, and that crossover just seems to be so natural now for so many people.
Right, and you can credit, I guess, to some extent, someone like Brock Lesnar, who obviously made a big name for himself in the WWE, and then crossed over into MMA, into the UFC, and won their heavyweight championship. I mean, who would have predicted that? I mean, because there is this perception of professional wrestlers, you know, what they do is not authentic, and they're not real fighters, but a lot of these guys are legit tough guys. Now, I'm not saying that they can walk into any MMA ring and dominate, but there are a lot of guys who I think could do well. I mean, you look at Alberto Del Rio. He has an MMA background. There's guys there that I think could be successful. Now, whether they'd be, you know, champions in the UFC, that's a different story, but I'm just saying, I think the crossover audience, too, as well. I'll get to the topic, but the crossover audience, as you mentioned, I think, like you said, there's more of that than people are willing to admit on both sides of the fence. I mean, I don't think Vince McMahon likes to say that his audience is completely different from MMA, and I'm sure Dana White says the same thing about wrestling fans. But when you watch a UFC event and they show someone like Stone Cold in the audience and they put the camera on him, it's usually the biggest pop of the night.
Yeah, UFC seems to embrace the idea of the wrestlers being a part of what they do, where WWE, it's never been as much. Although, back in the day, the WWE was very much able to work with the UFC. I mean, Ken Shamrock had a good long run there in the WWE, who was part of that UFC world.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you brought up Ken Shamrock. I totally blanked on him. That's a good call.
There you go. People will be kicking me if we do not talk about WrestleMania, though. It is this Sunday. And you mentioned Brock Lesnar. He is facing The Undertaker. You wrote a great article about the streak and The Undertaker and all that on Sportsnet. They're .ca, right? Not .com.
Yes, they're sportsnet.ca/WWE. Yeah.
So there you go. So check that out with Jimmy. But let what Jimmy wrote about that. But let's get into that match, seeing as I brought it up now. And the thing with this match for The Undertaker, the fact that he's facing Brock Lesnar, I haven't felt that they've built up that belief for me that Brock Lesnar's going to win this match. The fact that he's a part-time guy with the company, the fact that just the way this build has gone, it's been primarily 80% Undertaker, 10%, 20% Brock. It hasn't left me feeling like I did with CM Punk last year or with Triple H the years before and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, I mean, going into it up until, you know, the final Raw before WrestleMania, where Brock finally got the upper hand, you didn't feel that sense of jeopardy for The Undertaker, that the streak, you know, was in jeopardy. Usually every year, even last year to some extent with CM Punk, you kind of had this feeling that, hey, maybe there is a chance. You mentioned Shawn Michaels, especially with the stipulation of his career on the line. You know, stuff like that. It's tough to try and predict or to come up with a scenario to end the streak, because like I said in the article, I'm afraid that if it were to end, I don't know if it will or will not. From a personal standpoint, I'd like not to see it end, because I personally am a huge Undertaker guy. But just out of respect for him and his character and what he's done over the years, I'd like to see it stay intact. But if it were to end, it would have to be under the right circumstances, because just to say that, well, this talent will benefit from ending the streak, it's not that simple in my mind, in my opinion. I think it has to be done, like I said, under the circumstances for the right guy, because if it's not, then this guy's going to get the wrong kind of heat. And instead of it being the, oh my goodness, this guy defeated The Undertaker, ended the streak, it'll be, oh man, I can't believe that guy ended the streak. That's crap. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's got to be a guy that this company believes is going to be around for a long time and have longevity with the company and be able to handle the heat that beating that streak would cause, because there's a lot of talk that some wrestlers, they don't want to be the true heels anymore. They want to get some cheers, and they want to be loved. A guy who beat that streak, there's no way around it. They're going to be the most hated guy in wrestling for a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hate to go back to this, but I think, over the years, Roddy Piper was a heel who began getting cheered because fans were being entertained by him. Then I guess you can consider Randy Savage in that category. And I think Elizabeth had a lot to do with that, which is kind of the reason why he turned kind of babyface at the time. And the only way to turn him back heel was to have him split with Elizabeth. So that's very simple. But then, like you said, the cool heel thing, I think really started with the NWO. I mean, as great as that angle was, and some people say it was possibly one of the greatest angles of all time, the original NWO, not when it became 52 guys and they split into red and black and white or whatever it was.
And then we had the Latino World Order, the Blue World Order, the World Order of Professional Wrestling, but go on.
Yeah, no, it got diluted, but as far as cool heels go, see, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall were cool heels. You know what I mean? You don't make your audience laugh if you want to get hated. You don't make your audience smile. You don't come up with cool catchphrases that they'll chant along with. Do you know what I mean? It changed the dynamic for what heels were. And I think when I look at today's product, that's why I like Randy Orton, and maybe that's why the fans of today aren't tuning into him, because I view Randy Orton as an old school kind of heel.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, he embraces that hate more than anyone. He says, bring it on. And it's the total opposite of, I'll take an example from current WWE that we just saw recently. Now, God bless them for getting in the ring at their age and all that. The New Age Outlaws came back, had a little run with the tag team titles. But they were always doing the old catchphrases that everyone remembered from the Attitude Era. If you want to be a heel, that's not going to work.
No, it's not, because like you said, they will chant along, oh, you didn't know, and ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, they're going to go along with that, and it's something they remember, it's something they enjoyed. So, and then they did the right thing. One of the last appearances they made in the match where he said, you guys don't deserve our catchphrase, and then they didn't do it. And it got heat.
Yeah.
Simple. But maybe that was by design. I don't know if that was by design to, hey, let's lure these people in a little bit, get them on our side, and then we're just going to cut the rug out from under them. So who knows, that could have been the thought process there. I don't know.
Perhaps. So we'll get through this card now. One of the things that has been much promoted going into this has been this battle royal for the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. And for older fans, battle royals used to be a pretty normal thing. But ever since the Royal Rumbles come along, we don't see them very often. And I wonder how an audience that's younger feels about a battle royal and if it means much to them. And how much does a younger audience really know about Andre the Giant?
That's a good question because, like you said, Andre the Giant was, obviously a legend and has not been with us for a long time. And obviously, younger fans may not remember him, but through the magic of the Google machine and all sorts of websites out there where they could actually, view some of his matches, maybe they can go back and check out and see what the original Giant looked like. But as far as the Battle Royal goes, it's almost like a standard every year at WrestleMania where either it's a pre-show thing or something like that. It's almost like a kind of thing where everybody gets a chance to appear on WrestleMania. I like the idea that they actually put a tag on the match this year, the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. To some extent, it makes it feel a little more special than just saying, hey, we have a WrestleMania Battle Royal where everybody gets to show their face, you know what I mean? So in that respect, I do like the fact that they put some effort into making it seem special this year.
But this time, it's actually on the card where a lot of times when they had the Battle Royal in the past, it would be like something you'd only see live at the event.
Yeah, exactly. It would be on the pre-show or something like that. But, by putting that tag on it, like I said, it kind of makes it feel a little more important. So I guess they bumped it up to the main card.
And whoever wins this, should be a young up-and-coming talent that wins this, shouldn't it? Because it seems like something, if they're going to keep this going, that's a nice little thing to put on the old wrestling resume that you were the first winner of this event that they're trying to build up.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. But, again, playing devil's advocate here, do you go with the obvious? And because it's the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, and because of the obvious comparisons that the Big Show has had with Andre the Giant, do you have him win the first one, and then you have a young guy kind of dethrone him next year and get the trophy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can go several ways with this, but, like we said before, people want change. They want to see something new. So if it does happen to be Big Show, I'm afraid, especially with that crowd in New Orleans, I hope they don't crap on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be my biggest worry. The other thing that they could do is harken back to an older angle, but the Battle Royal they did at WrestleMania 4, where you got the great angle with Bret Hart going singles and feuding with Bad News Brown, who was the winner of that Battle Royal. You could get an angle out of this if you do it the right way.
Absolutely. That's a good call. See, in that Battle Royal, there was something, at the end of it for the winner. It was a trophy. So, making it mean something actually is a plus.
And then, going back to your days as a referee, would you want anything to do with refereeing this Divas match that I totally do not understand how this is going to work? One fall, 14 Divas for AJ Lee's Divas title. How the heck is this going to work?
I have no idea. The only thing we know is it's, like you said, one fall, so I have no idea what that one fall is, what the rules of the match are. So if it was up to me, I would say, if I had a choice, I would prefer not to be the striped shirt in the ring for that one, because it's going to be, it's going to be confusing.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I mean, I have no idea what to expect out of that. And added on top of that, generally speaking, no offense to the ladies, they don't usually get a lot of time. So you're going to have all this chaos in probably a short amount of time. I just don't know what's going to happen here. Although I do think, because they played it out so much, that AJ Lee has no chance of winning. She probably ends up winning.
That's my feeling, too. It's kind of like that old, you lose a lot going into a big match, which means you're going to win.
Yeah, that's the basic wrestling logic that we've become accustomed to. Now, this match between Triple H and Daniel Bryan, I have thought they have done an excellent job with this, in the sense of Triple H has convinced all those people on the internet that think he is this horrible human being that he may actually win this match and may go into the final match with Randy Orton and Batista, and he's played on all the things that people think about him, and I think it's been pretty brilliant on his behalf. And Daniel Bryan, I mean, since SummerSlam, this guy has been the most over person in this company.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. I love the fact that Triple H brought up all the so-called rumors about him and how he acquired his position in the company. And so, like when Batista brought up, the only reason you got the position you're at is because you married the boss's daughter. I love that he came back, Triple H came back and said, well, regardless of how I got here, I'm here now, so deal with that. You know what I mean? You're right. He played on everybody's emotions, everybody who reads all the rumors about him and that sort of stuff. And it's been a great build. I mean, I think, like you said, since SummerSlam, this has been the hottest thing going, and people complaining about Daniel Bryan before the stipulation of the being inserted into the three-way match. People complaining about Triple H versus Daniel Bryan, I don't get the complaint because it actually makes sense. You want to get back at the guy who's been terrorizing you and screwing you over and over again. It made sense, but the added stipulation is obviously, an added plus to this.
It does, but for a couple of reasons why those people who are so into knowing everything, I think, were a little upset at first about this, was one, there was a time when they were teasing a match between HBK and Daniel Bryan, which would have been just as good a match and maybe even better. And then two, everyone knows about CM Punk's situation and how he left, and the rumor was he was the guy who was going to face Triple H, and Daniel Bryan wasn't even going to be in this match. So there's all of that to consider as well, I guess.
Yeah, it's true. And from what I understand, it was originally, like you said, going to be CM Punk versus Triple H, and Daniel Bryan wasn't going to be in the title picture, which I think by design was intended to further infuriate those who think that Daniel Bryan's being held down. Now, if you like you said, if you've been paying attention since SummerSlam, who's the one guy that's been at or near the top of every storyline, major storyline going on?
It's been Daniel Bryan.
Besides John Cena, it's been Daniel Bryan. So, for those who are thinking that that the WWE is ignoring them, I think it was done by design. My thought was it was going to go like I talk about full circle, because it began at SummerSlam last year. I thought that it would go to SummerSlam this year, and that's when the big moment comes, the whole one-year build where Daniel Bryan finally wins the WWE Championship and possibly defeats whoever it happens to be the champion. Maybe it would be Triple H, who knows? But it happens at SummerSlam, so you have that one-year arc for it to come full circle. And I think with the CM Punk situation, all that did was, instead of changing their booking plans, it just accelerated it, if you know what I mean. It just sped up the process as opposed to, changed everything.
Yeah.
I think the plan was for Daniel Bryan to eventually triumph, but that was going to be at SummerSlam. That's my thought. I don't have any inside knowledge of this, but like I said, the CM Punk situation just sped up the process.
Who knows? But at the end of the day, you know what? Fans, you ended up where you wanted to be, and who cares how you got there? That would be my thing on it. And then, of course, whoever wins that match goes on to face Randy Orton and Dave Bautista. Safe to say, I don't think anyone expects either of these guys to win the match.
No, logic would dictate that Daniel Bryan goes into the match, and the last thing you see going off the air at WrestleMania is 75,000-80,000 people doing the yes chant. I think that's the shot you want going off the air. But then again, playing devil's advocate, if they do decide to go the full year arc, what if Triple H does insert himself in, you know, somehow into that match or defeats Bryan or whatever through cheating, as they say, and, you know, he becomes the WWE champion, and that's when it happens at SummerSlam, where Daniel Bryan finally beats him for the title. So the guy who's been screwing him over for a year, he defeats him for the title, and he's the authority figure and the whole bit. I'm just playing devil's advocate, but logic for me dictates that Daniel Bryan should be the guy, you know, holding the title at the end and having, especially with that, like I said before, with that New Orleans crowd's going to be crazy.
Should he do this on his own as well? Because it was just announced that Stone Cold's going to make an appearance on this WrestleMania, and there's been all this talk of all these different people that could interfere in that final match, from Triple H to Brie Bella to, I guess, now Stone Cold could come out because people make the comparison between Daniel Bryan and Stone Cold. Should Daniel Bryan just win this match on his own if this is the direction we're going, or is it okay if he gets someone that helps him get to this point?
I think if he does it alone, I think that would be the best course, because, you know, when you're a babyface and you get help, it kind of dilutes the win, if you know what I mean. Like, that heels get help. But I could see maybe something different, like instead of him interfering and helping him win, whereas there is attempted interference by, let's say, Triple H and the corporate outlaws and whoever else, and maybe Stone Cold is the guy who comes in and kind of negates the interference and allows Daniel Bryan to get a clean win.
Yeah.
That would work. Yeah.
Well, that's what he did once upon a time for Mick Foley, and that's what made me think the fact that Stone Cold's on this show all of a sudden was an interesting thought. One last match to tackle. John Cena has been in the main event for the last, I don't know how many years. This year, not so much. Facing Bray Wyatt, and this is simply a match where I think Bray Wyatt has everything to gain and John Cena has very little to lose. It's all on Bray Wyatt in this, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this match has the potential, not from a technical standpoint, because everybody, I don't know why people concentrate so much on technical skill. I love the technical wrestling match, but at the same time, I also love a match that has great psychology and tells a fantastic story. I think this is going to be one that tells a great story. This, along with Undertaker and Brock, I think the match will tell a great story. Bray Wyatt, like you said, is in a win-win situation here, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, beating John Cena at WrestleMania would be a huge, huge step in his progression. But at the same time, even if he were to lose, I think, depending on exactly how it's done, again, he could come out even stronger in a losing situation. It's one of those things where you make the guy, where the guy who wins makes the guy who loses. And I think that could happen here. So for Bray Wyatt, I think it's a win-win. And I like the fact that with John Cena, that for him to beat Bray Wyatt in this match, and if he does, it's a big deal for him. At least the perception that they're making, is that it is a big deal for John Cena to beat this guy.
Yeah, he's made it about his legacy in this company, and that, in some senses, if you want to look at it, that might be more important than a title if people fully buy into it. If a guy's fighting for his entire existence and what he stands for, that should mean a lot. And the thing about Bray Wyatt, the promos heading into this match have been just phenomenal. I mean, he is really on his game, and this whole stuff about heroes and John Cena's a liar, and even the sheep mask thing, I thought, putting the sheep mask on him, there was a lot of symbolism in that. I just thought it was fantastic.
Well, absolutely. His promo work has been fantastic. Different from Paul Heyman, because if you talk about Paul Heyman being fantastic on the mic, Paul Heyman is gold, this guy is gold too, but in a different style. It's in a different, unique style. It kind of reminds you a little bit of a diabolical Jake the Snake Roberts, if I can make that comparison, but even creepier than the old Jake the Snake Roberts kind of stuff. And the challenge for him going forward is to maintain that level. And I have all the confidence in the world that, creatively in his mind, he can do it.
And he's doing it as Jake the Snake did, by the way, in a PG, or supposed to be PG era.
No, yeah, he hasn't gone off the rails and, you know, got really crazy, you know. I'm loving his work, and I spoke to somebody, I own a friend of mine out down in Pittsburgh who wasn't getting into the Bray Wyatt thing, and I said, you know what, he didn't like it because, you know, fans were cheering him, as opposed to booing him. He's supposed to be the heel, so to speak, and I said, but that's not the point. The point is this guy's different, he's unique, and he will get there, and whether he becomes a babyface down the road somewhere, that remains to be seen, but you know what? Just sit back and enjoy the work. That's what I do. I enjoy the work that this guy does. I think, like we mentioned in my article about The Undertaker, if there's a guy to break the streak, and if they book Bray Wyatt in a way that makes sense, I think he potentially could be the guy to break the streak.
Yeah, I think it fits right in with The Undertaker and all of that. And it will be interesting for him, and I'm really excited to see that match. And I think, too, you know, if this was done in the Attitude Era, I don't know if it would have been as good. I think Bray Wyatt would have kidnapped Nikki Bella by now, and I just think we would have seen all kinds of craziness that we didn't need.
No, absolutely. I think the way this is being presented is just perfect right now.
And then what?
Don't change it yet.
And then one last thing before we let you go. Obviously, this is Savage's condo on the moon. Do you have a good Randy Savage memory or story to go out with?
Yeah, actually, he saved my butt one time to get out of a speeding ticket. This is when I first started working for Jack Tunney. Jack gave me his Cadillac to go pick him up at the hotel to bring him to the Maple Leaf Gardens. And I was running a little late, so I was speeding down Dixon Road out by the airport to pick him up, and I got pulled over, and I started getting questioned by the officer. Here's a young guy driving a huge Fleetwood Cadillac, and license plate says Tunney, spelled backwards, so it was Yannut. And he goes, whose car is this? I said, it's my boss's car, and where are you going? And I said, I'm going to pick up Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. And he freaked out. No way. And so basically he said, well, I'll tell you what, if you can get me an autographed picture from him, I will let you off the ticket. So I said, follow me to the hotel. And I followed me to the hotel. I called up to the room, and Liz answered the phone. And I explained to her, I said, here's the situation. Can you help me out here? And she said, sure, Randy and I will be happy to do it. So they come down about 5 minutes later, and Randy, what are you doing, officer? Who am I making it out to? And she was really cool about it.
Fantastic. That's a great way to end. But before we let you go, what is going on with you with Aftermath and WrestleMania and all that's going on this weekend and beyond?
Well, Aftermath, I'll announce it to you. We're expanding the Aftermath brand. We're going to start doing a web exclusive on sportsnet.ca /WWE on the Aftermath section, where Monday nights after Raw, we'll have a special live stream of Aftermath after Raw. So this will happen on the web only for now. Hopefully we get on the TV as well. But it'll be an exclusive on the web, kind of like a post-Raw Aftermath. And like I said, the new website is up there. It's at www.sportsnet.ca/WWE, where there's going to be videos, photos. Like you mentioned, I'll be blogging a couple of times a week on there. And it's going to be great. And if people want to comment about anything Aftermath related, it's aftermath@sportsnet.ca is the email address. And personally, if they want to contact me, I'm on Twitter. Very simple, @JimmyCorderas. I'm on Facebook as well, but as you know, I don't frequent Facebook very much, so if you want to contact me, Twitter's probably better.
Yeah, and Jimmy can talk you down when you get upset with Raw or SmackDown or whatever, as he has done me a couple times.
No, I like to have fun. I like to play devil's advocate sometimes and just say, look, let's try to look at it from a different angle. That's all. I have fun with it. I never get angry with anybody, even though some people think I'm getting angry. I'm not. I'm just in my own weird way, having fun. You know what I mean? That's what Twitter, I think, is supposed to be there for fun.
Oh yeah, it is. But but some of the most fun you can have on Twitter is when people actually start to take the Twitter seriously.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And also one last plug, of course. April 1st was the 1-year anniversary of the release of my book, The Three Count: My Life in Stripes. Obviously, if you'd like to check it out, if you haven't, you can get it at the ECW Press website or Amazon.ca, or you can hit me up on Twitter and I can show you exactly where to get it.
Well, there you go. And I actually meant to mention that, but I got thinking about your other stuff with Sportsnet 360, and I totally forgot, so I'm glad you mentioned that. Thank you, Jimmy. This was a pleasure, and hopefully you've had a good time, and you'll come back and do this again.
Oh, absolutely. I enjoyed it very much, and we can work it out again. There'd be no problem.
There we go. That was myself and Jimmy Corderas, and please listen to him and check out his stuff on Aftermath. Broke a little news for us that Aftermath is going to be starting their own After Raw sort of deal on the interweb on Sportsnet.ca, so that'll be good to see those guys and their thoughts on Raw after it goes off the air, and they're doing blogs over there and all kinds of stuff, so good for WWE fans. The more content, the merrier, I always say, with wrestling. It's great to hear from everybody and what they have to say. And Jimmy, a great guy, and if you don't follow him on Twitter, you really should, because he's a very intelligent and knowledgeable person about this business, and great stuff. And the story about the Macho Man is fantastic.
Are we going to hear your Macho Man impression and during the rest of this podcast, buddy? I miss it. I miss it already.
No, it's not happening, because Jimmy might listen to this, and then if my Macho Man impression is not up to snuff, he might tell me, and that would crush me.
Ah, that's a shame.
But we do have business to attend to. We have to predict this card and predict all the matches. We kind of already did the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. We both think that Alexander Rusev, even though he's not officially entered, will be your winner of the first annual Andre the Giant Battle Royal. So we'll see if we're right. And we actually went out of order a little bit, I guess, because on the pre-show, your tag team titles, we talked about the value of titles with Jimmy Corderas. The tag team titles once upon a time used to be on this show too, but they're only good enough for the pre-show this year, and the Usos are your reigning champions in this four-way festival that includes the Real Americans, the Los Matadors, and for whatever reason, Curtis Axel and Ryback.
Well, it's going to be the Usos. Do we really need to go too in-depth? I mean, Los Matadores are just in there for... Actually, I can't tell you why they're in there, because I have no clue why they're in there. And Ryback and Curtis Axel are just a throw-together team that have no future together. The only real threat is Cesaro and Jack Swagger, but it seems like they're on the splits coming up soon, so no reason to put the belts on them. And the Usos haven't had it that long anyway. Let's see what they can do with it before you start thinking about removing the straps.
I've been trying to figure out a way that the Real Americans win this match, but I can't come up with it. It seems much more likely that they end up breaking up in this.
Yes.
And that we get the breakup here on the pre-show, and, you get Cesaro over. A lot of people watch the pre-show, maybe even more than we'll have access to the actual pay-per-view. It's a nice way to get Cesaro over, I guess. It kind of makes some sense. So I like the Usos in that as well, and I like the Real Americans to break up, and finally we will get to see the giant swing on Zeb Coulter on the pre-show at WrestleMania.
That would be pretty cool. But to the best of my knowledge, us folk here in Canada, we won't be able to see this match, will we?
Probably not, because it will be on the WWE Network. So unless you go by nefarious means, which we cannot encourage on this podcast, but let's face it, some people do, you can see it that way. But a legal and binding way, I don't think you'll be able to, because the 2-hour pre-show for WrestleMania, the first hour will be for everyone to see, and then the second hour will be exclusive to the WWE Network.
Well, that That sucks, because I was actually looking forward to this match. Say what you will about some of the teams in it, but they could put on one heck of a contest. So, but, I mean, the answer is pretty obvious. The Usos will win, but, yeah, I'm disappointed I can't actually watch it.
What is not obvious is what the hell is going to happen in that Divas Battle Royal, whatever the heck it is, Vicky Guerrero Invitational. Jimmy Corderas admitted on this very podcast he would want no part of this thing as a ref, and I don't blame him at all, because this just seems like a train wreck waiting to happen.
Well, they made a bad mistake making this one fall to a finish. I mean, you're going to have so many people in the ring at the same time. It's like, how does that make sense? How is someone going to actually land a clean pinfall or submission when there's, like, so many other people trying to break it up? Like, it's such a bad idea, but obviously they want to get everyone on the roster, on the card as possible, and it's not going to be a great match. It's going to be probably the bathroom break for a lot of people, but I mean, if for my pick, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to stick with AJ Lee. She's held the Divas Championship. I think she's going on, like, she's going to have it for around 260 or so days by the time the event starts. So I think if they want to take the belt off her, they can have just, you know, an actual face, someone defeat her straight up. It doesn't make sense for her to lose it in this match, but it would be an easy way for them to take the belt off her.
And by the way, we did not mention this, but rumors are going around the future Mrs. CM Punk.
No, yes, engaged to CM Punk. They make a lovely couple, don't they?
Well, you know, I don't know what the WWE brass thinks about that, but I think they do. That is fine with me, but let's put it this way, because I have a working theory about this that just won't go out of the way. The fact they call this an invitational, they didn't just pull that out of thin air.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have the 14 divas that are in there, and this is what we actually get as a match, I agree, AJ Lee goes over, she retains her title, because they've made it so obvious that she won't, it just makes sense that they'll do the opposite. But if it's an invitational, and someone enters this match that we don't think of, well then, all bets are off, and I don't know what she's doing these days, but I know she had a bad, bad ending with this company, but could you imagine if Karma entered this match? What could happen?
She's gotten into herself into really good shape. Have you seen her lately?
I have not, but I have heard that as well. And I just think, why is this called an invitational? Like, everyone's been invited already. Where's the surprise in that? I feel someone's coming out that isn't supposed to be in this match and going to win it and destroy the entire Divas division when they do it.
Well, the only two names that I could really realistically think of are, A, Lita, since she's going to be there for the Hall of Fame. She could just make an appearance. She's not going to win, but she could be entered in it. And then maybe even, you know, a long shot would be Paige, the NXT Divas champion, and it would be a good way to get her on the main roster.
It could be, and if you're thinking this is nuts and out-of-the-box thinking, the WWE has done this before. Gail Kim won a Battle Royal to win the Divas title on her first night on Raw.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like they put a lot of stock in that Divas title where they wouldn't just put it on someone who walked in the match unannounced. They've done it before. They could do it again, but we'll see. Maybe I'm being hopeful and putting way more thought in the Divas match than the people at WWE are.
Yeah.
That could very well be.
Only once a year do we do this.
Yeah, the Divas didn't even make the card last year, famously, as documented on Total Divas. But anyway, the guy that makes the card every year, he is John Cena. He is facing Bray Wyatt, as we mentioned. I think you gave your pick away at the beginning of the podcast that Bray Wyatt was going to win and go over. I think he will too, but I still like my booking idea from last week. I think that would almost be better in some way. If he destroyed John Cena and left him out of the WWE for some period of time, I think that would be far more impactful than just having the win at WrestleMania.
No, I like it. I'd rather him just beat him cleanly, and then they could probably feud for the next couple of months, because I like where this is going. This is not something I just kind of want to see as a build to WrestleMania, and then once Extreme Rules hits, they're both off in different directions. I think they have some legitimate legs behind this thing, and having Wyatt go over at WrestleMania will just be the beginning.
Anyway, if you're wondering what we're talking about, go back and listen to episode 4 of this very podcast, and you will find out what my booking idea was. See? We might get a few new listeners. They go back, listen to the old ones.
There you go.
That's called marketing, folks. Anyway, John Cena knows a lot about marketing. I don't know nearly as much as him, apparently, because I don't have my headband on right now.
That's true.
Undertaker Brock, we already talked about this. We both think Undertaker, no question about it, right?
No doubt about it.
And I think we're almost done here, because there's only 7 matches on this card. That's crazy.
There's 7, yeah, but I think there's 8 if you count the tag title match, right?
Okay, yeah, and we both said Shield, and so all that's left is the big ones. Mm-hmm. We have Daniel Bryan versus Triple H. First and foremost, does Daniel Bryan get past the game Triple H and advance to the main event? I say yes!
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 Yes! There we go. We marked out more than the people at the press conference for the WrestleMania in New York City who just were dead. It was like they were at a funeral at that press conference. I felt really bad for everyone there. Although
a bunch of suit and ties, they're not really passionate about it.
Well,
you know?
No, that's the. I mean, I've worked in the media. You're not there to cheer and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And WWE hasn't really caught on to that, to the sense of, yeah, the working media, we're not going to do your little chants and all that. I'm sorry, we're not allowed. We'd like to, but no.
Yeah.
The highlight of that, though, was Dave Bautista, who is not winning this final match. But, boy, oh, boy, at that press conference, Dave was funny.
Why can't he cut promos like that on television?
Well, I think he could if he wanted to, but that was absolutely hilarious. The whole bit where he basically just threw away his script, said the person that wrote it should be fired, and unless it was Stephanie, of course.
Yeah.
Who's drooled on a lot, as Dave told us earlier. But yeah, Dave then was mocking himself almost by having just the funniest interaction with himself, where he was playing Dave Bautista and Dave Bautista hating fan. And it is great stuff. If you can find it online, go check it out. Dave Bautista actually being entertaining for once.
Whoa, who saw that coming?
Yeah! So there you go. Big Dave and Randy Orton are not winning this match. I think that's fairly obvious. As I said with Jimmy Corderas, I don't think anyone expects that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
If by process of elimination, if we have already said yes, yes, yes to Daniel Bryan beating Triple H, well then I guess he has to win this match, and we get 70,000 or whatever they fit in the Silverdome. No, that was WrestleMania 3. In the Superdome, going yes, 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 and Daniel Bryan walks away your world heavyweight champion.
This has been a long time coming, my friend. We fans have been enduring some crazy booking since SummerSlam when he lost that title, but it's all come together. Fans have been patient for the most part, anyway. I'd like to think.
No, they haven't. They have not been patient.
I've been a little more patient than others. Maybe I'm just talking, you know, for myself here. But you know what? After WrestleMania, everyone can shut up. You can look back on these last couple of months and be like, okay, it was all worth it.
Well, we'll see. No, because you know what the next thing will be? The next thing for the paranoid Daniel Bryan fans will be, will he make it out of Raw with his title?
Yeah, that's true. Every time he's won the title, he's lost it within 24 hours or even that very day.
He is making Mick Foley look like a long-term reigning WWE champion. And I forget what the number is, but Mick always brings it up, how he held the WWE title for like 2 or 3 times and for only a combination of like a month or something like that. It's
right.
Some low number like that. I think it's even lower than that. But
so what's
yeah.
the over-under on how long we think he's going to hold the belt then?
I think he's got it at least till SummerSlam.
Right.
Because that's when we get into the renewals for the WWE Network. So we want to keep all the people happy until SummerSlam so they'll get their WWE Network again. Of course, this is only our American fans, us here in Canada. No WWE Network. Who cares? It doesn't matter with us. But as far as the network goes down in the States, they want happy, smiley WWE fans that want to renew their WWE Network. So I say he at least lasts till SummerSlam, which, generally speaking, that is kind of the tipping point for a new champion. As we saw back in the day, Chris Benoit, when he got the world title, but when he got the world title, he only made it to SummerSlam, and then he lost here, actually here in Toronto, to Randy Orton, making Randy Orton the youngest world heavyweight champion in history. And, you know, then Randy went on to feud with Triple H and whatnot, but usually that's the measuring stick. You get till at least then. So I anything before SummerSlam would be rather shocking to me.
And you're totally right about the whole WWE Network thing. I think that, you know, let's keep the smiles on the WWE Universe and give them Brian a champion as long as possible, unless he just craps the bed and the ratings go down. And, you know, I mean, I don't know about the whole pay-per-view buys with the network, but he doesn't live up to the hype as world champion, and they just take the belt off and put it on, put it back on Orton or Batista.
And then one last thing before we close this out, there's all the speculation of CM Punk, he will not go away, as far as people speculating. And one of the most interesting ones I heard was, what if CM Punk came out and screwed Daniel Bryan out of the title at WrestleMania?
Oh, God. Fantasy booking.
It is, but oh, my gosh.
Why
would he be a heel?
Why are we going here?
Would he be, in all honesty, though, you would make him the hugest heel ever.
That is true, yeah. I can only imagine.
And the only reason I put any credence to this is CM Punk would absolutely love that.
That's true.
So the best in the world watch will be on all weekend in New Orleans, I am sure. What if he shows up at Colt Cabana's $5 wrestling? I mean, then the jig will be up, and oh my gosh, people will go insane.
Let's give it a percent. What do we think? Is CM Punk going to be in New Orleans? I'd give it... Less than one.
Let's put it this way. He's not on Mania. If he shows at all, it's on Monday Night Raw. And it's... I think we talked about this on a previous podcast as well. If Punk were to come back, he becomes the first contender to face Daniel Bryan.
Yes.
And it's all set up to do it. Because everyone, storyline-wise, has forgot about CM Punk. They're all chanting yes. No one's chanting CM Punk anymore. They are once in a while, but very rarely. So CM Punk will not be happy about that, and that will be that. And off you go with one heck of a feud, I would think. But that being said, CM Punk seems to be enjoying life without the WWE right now. And even though Stone Cold Steve Austin has actually said that CM Punk will be at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't buy that for a second.
I don't know. Well, Stone Cold's going to be there.
Well, maybe he knows something that we don't.
Maybe he does. Hopefully, we all enjoy WrestleMania, and we will see. Guess what? We have another guest next week, too.
Who do we got?
I can't tell yet, because I'm a big believer. Until the interview is done, I don't like to promote it. But we do have someone else, someone who people will know. A fixture in broadcasting wrestling in Canada. How about that?
Well, I'm sure it'll be amazing, just like the interview you had with Jimmy, buddy.
Let's hope so. I'm getting good at getting some people in here, and who knows, maybe we'll get some wrestlers in here, too.
That would be nice.
It'd be nice. But with all that said, we hope you enjoy WrestleMania and all the fun and festivities that go along with it. And it's been fun talking with you, and, you know... let's hope that WrestleMania 30 lives up to the hype.
Fingers crossed, man. It's still WrestleMania, so I'm holding out hope.
The cream of the crop! Nobody does it better. More questions!
I'm sorry about that.
Goodbye!